Newhouse has to mimic it. So I think there's some reason to think about having some design standards for ADUs, but maybe not always matching the existing house. And I know this takes staff time, so partly I'm here to encourage the city to commit some time in the stretched budget of the Bureau of Planning Sustainability to look at a further revision of micro codes for small homes. And one last thing to leave you with, we did a study of the last 3 years of multiple listing service homes that have been sold. And it turns out for every one legally permitted accessory dwelling unit, there's almost three that are under-permitted or not permitted at all. So the city doesn't even know about most of these out there. So the good news is that people are building them anyway and meeting the city housing goals. The bad news is that they're mostly illegal. So we'd like to make a path that supports people to do legally what we ought to be doing as a policy for the city.
Can you leave your card or a couple of cards with Carla?
And
we don't like unpermitted anything.
Yeah, I know. Neither do I. Like
so,
the
red screen. May I ask a question?
Of course.
I know you also are a developer of courtyard housings, and you wisely chose to stick to one issue, and thank you for bringing the ADU issue to the fore, because I agree with you on many of the points that you made. On courtyard housing, I'd just like to ask your expert opinion. There's a proposal to require the homes that front on the public street to have their front entrance on the front on the public street rather than facing into the courtyard. Does that cause you any concern?
Boy, I haven't studied that piece of the code. I think that there are cases where it's okay to have, I did a project where there are four homes in four corners of a lot, and having the houses sort of the doors, at least the rear houses face each other rather than the street, isn't objectionable to me. I think it's still important for the front houses facing the street to have doors facing the street so it welcomes the neighborhood. So I don't know if that's hitting
the... Take a look at that and let me know. I'd really appreciate your advice because I've seen some of your developments and I think they're really nice.
Okay. Yeah.
Hi. My name is Gwen Milius, and I'm here in my capacity as the Vice Chair of the Portland Design Commission. My address is 221 Southeast Main, Portland, 97214. We're here to discuss the proposed amendment regarding turbines, and I appreciate the Council taking their time to consider this amendment carefully. I'm actually going to read in a letter from my esteemed colleague, Jeff Sturr, who's the Chair and just arrived. He may have some additional comments after this testimony. So, Honorable Mayor, Portland City Council members, the Portland Design Commission, charged by City Council to uphold design quality in the City of Portland, reviewed the RICAP 5 and Green Amendments proposal with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability at multiple public hearings. We ultimately helped craft a very clear path for the emergence of new green technologies, including wind turbines. Yesterday, we were informed of an amendment to exempt wind turbines, the zoning code and design review, for a period of 2 years. This sets a poor precedent and is of grave concern to the Commission for a number of reasons. One, the implied temporary period of 2 years has inherent challenges. Given the substantial structural demands and costs for turbines to be safely mounted due to wind-generated vibration to the structure below, exempting review for their location may also imply later approvability. And given the cost of relocation or removal, if after a two-year period it's found insupportable to meet zoning, the zone or historic criteria, we could have a situation where, you know, we have a turbine that can't be safe, but is basically approved. Wind turbines visible from the street would not be found approvable in historic districts under today's design guidelines, but this exemption sends this mixed signal suggesting that any location could be appropriate and compatible. Design consideration of these technologies through a land use review process is a modest effort and cost compared with the typical cost of the product and its installation, which will be visible for years to come. We really don't think that design review is that onerous of, a requirement, and would like to see it maintained for these significant structures. The Design and Landmarks Commission helped to craft design and historic review exemptions for many green technologies as part of the RICAP 5 package and, as previously mentioned, considered wind turbines at length. A parallel example to turbines are cell towers. They were and are still seen as very important, too. Wind technologies will have the same, if not more, visual impact and will also be subject to changing technologies and difficulty in enforcing removal over time. Wind turbine infrastructure will remain an add to the city's urban remnant clutter, if not considered as a part of the building design. Poor design integration of these systems reflects badly for both the green movement as well as the city's overall design quality, particularly due to their visibility. And there are several established view corridors throughout the downtown area protecting views of various vistas, including Mount Hood, that this amendment could seriously affect. I will be sending you a YouTube video of a homemade wind turbine that anyone could put up under this amendment, and I'd like you guys to watch it.
So we disagree on this. It's okay.
So in your opinion, do the design guidelines, are they suitable for assessing whether wind turbines would be good or not?
Having the ability to review on a discretionary basis the placement of wind turbines, the ability to discuss whether they're appropriate on a particular cornice line, you know, having the ability to basically take a look at large mechanical structures, especially on existing buildings, is important. And it does disturb the line of sight to...
Do the existing approval criteria allow you to address those things? Do they talk about the kinds of things that wind turbines look like, or would we need to develop better or new design guidelines?
That's an interesting question because I think that there's code that addresses mechanical structures on rooftop, line of sight, et cetera, and wind turbines, I think, would by default fall under that. Tim Herron is here, and he may be able to speak to that. But we can take a look at wind turbines now as part of other mechanical improvements.
It's disappointing that the Design Commission would equate wind turbines to cell phone towers. I find that disappointing.
Well,
so we agree to disagree on this one, and I appreciate your testimony. Thanks. Carla, the next folks to testify?
The last two are Mark White and Bonnie McKnight.
Ms. McKnight, welcome back. Mr. White,
hello.
Good to see you back.
Hello, everyone. I'm just going to read my letter here. So I'm here today to request counsel to extricate the courtyard component that addresses density determination in recap 5 code amendments prior to approval in order for further refining to be done to this particular issue. I found it difficult to understand the exact intent and have concerns that the new code may create a potentially dangerous problem if the entire common area is not considered before determining the potential density of the site. Specifically, I'm afraid that developers will opt for the highest density possible and then convert space that was verbally identified for green space and use that as parking to accommodate the increased density. This would eliminate any possibility for safe play areas and developments that are supposed to be family friendly. Since Palhurst-Gilbert neighborhood has the highest amount of multifamily zoning of any neighborhood in the city, I think it's reasonable to assume that we will see the lion's share of this type of development. I'd like to reiterate that in addition to the lack of basic safety features like sidewalks and crosswalks throughout the neighborhood, we also are seriously park deficient for the amount of people who reside in that neighborhood. And green space is... for children to play in takes on critical importance to park-deficient neighborhoods. And more importantly, I think we should not delude ourselves to think that young children will not play in parking lots when there's no park, playground, or green space available. While the majority of the courtyard-related code amendments are helpful and consider the needs of families, this one component, I believe, has the potential to jeopardize the safety of our children and seriously diminish the quality of life of families and all residents who may reside in courtyard-oriented developments. I respectfully request that you take this into consideration prior to approving the suggested recap code amendments and that you request the commission to address this concern in the code with very specific verbiage to ensure the safety and quality of life of children, families who may reside in future courtyard-oriented developments. And as an aside, I'd like to suggest, in order to make these connections in the future, that council, in further recruitment for the Planning Commission, give serious weight to candidates from East Portland who will be well-versed in the needs of families and will be able to provide a practical application to those needs to the city code. And I think there's a big difference between families that live in East County as there are with families who live in the Pearl and Inner Portland. It's a very different kind of dynamic. I'd like to use the last part of my time here to make a comment on what Commissioner Fritz had mentioned, and I don't know if I heard correctly, but if there is anything in the code here that says that R2 density should be increased, I would absolutely beg you not to do that. our neighborhood has tremendous amounts of A overlay, which would mean that not only would the density increase, but developers would have the potential to double that. And until we have sidewalks on our major corridors, let alone the surface streets where all the residences are, I think it's absolutely, it just doesn't make sense to do that. And for people to be able to get around without sidewalks and with higher density and no crosswalks, I mean, it's just, it's a recipe for disaster, and I would really discourage you to do that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Mayor Adams, members of the council, good morning, good afternoon, good 2010.
Good
yes, good evening. Hopefully not. First of all, I just, before you start timing me.
I get to decide when we start timing.
Well, and that was a challenge.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay. I simply want to recognize.
President of the council, take as long as you want.
Thank you very much. Oh, that's good. It's good to have an ally.
First, I have to die.
I just wanted to say how proud I am that two East Portland people are up here and that one of them is a Spirit of Portland Award winner from this year.
Indeed.
Who has renovated a whole area of East Portland by his actions, not just around land use, but around everything. So I'm proud to be at the same table with him.
The other is a 1994 Spirit of Portland Award winner. Is that right?
Well, yes, but that was a different era, right? and I warn you now, President Fish,
thank you.
That I have 4 minutes of comment, and I have cut those down from at least 30 minutes, so feel rewarded. But I wanted to tell you, I just warn you.
Is that a request?
Please.
Yes.
Thank you. You may not like that after I make my comments. The recap package is a product of a broken process. My name, by the way, is Bonnie McKnight. I'm from East Portland. This recap package is a product of a broken process, in my opinion. I want to first comment on some elements in the package, but more importantly, I think, on the process by which we are currently changing code. This package is 268 pages and provides code changes or advice for more than 60 types of development decisions. Here are two major elements of concern among many. Courtyard housing density calculations. The suggested changes are intended to make building courtyard housing more attractive to developers. More density calculation flexibility is proposed. The changes treat common green and shared courts as the same thing. They are not. Shared courts are already used for vehicle access and parking. Common greens prohibit those uses. There should be no additional flexibility for building coverage calculations dealing with shared courts, since they can be used as if they were streets and parking lots, and almost always are. That's a fairly simple line through a piece of code. Building eaves. The green building package includes further erosion of side setbacks by increasing the depth to which eaves can intrude into the setback. Commissioner Fritz was a member of the Planning Commission when the first relaxation of side setback measurements was made. At that time, in order to entice builders to build any eaves at all, setbacks were changed to be measured from the building face rather than the eave projection. The alternative of requiring eaves, which would have made the actual building smaller, lost to intrusion into the side setbacks, which functioned to provide space, light, air, and a variety of other site benefits. The proposed code change would allow further erosion of side setbacks by allowing eaves to extend to within 3 feet of the lot line. Building hard surfaces closer together, regardless of whether they are buildings, driveway, or eaves, is contradictory to many of the watershed and livability values we talk about every day. This eave extension proposal should not be accepted. Recap 5 is a product of a really bad process. It is important to build a real review process into code changes. In the past, the neighborhood association system was part of that process. Current code changes have no consistent process, review period, or clear final draft status. The final proposed draft of Recap 5 was not subject to any review or comment period, which could fully inform the Planning Commission about the package. The final 268-page document was posted on the web sometime after November 23, 2009. as the city has been told routinely, the volunteer nature of citizen involvement of all kinds is not respected by using the Thanksgiving Christmas period for commenting on any significant change to city rules, regulations, and practices. It's especially bad when the complexity of code changes should be considered by their overall impact rather than as simple changes to written lines of regulations. The current process is not fair to citizens. It's not fair to various bureaus that struggle to find balances when conflicts occur. It's not fair to the Planning Commission, which is asked to provide a comprehensive review of complex code issues without adequate community input. It's not fair to those who want to take ownership of their city in a positive and cost-effective way. And it's not fair to all of us who must use this final council hearing to bring these issues into discussion. I challenge you to change things now. Provide direction today to require that future code changes impacting land use go through a neighborhood association review process prior to Planning Commission consideration so that the information you receive truly helps you judge the future financial, public trust, and Bureau service impacts of these changes before they come back to you as complaints and anger from the public who elected you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is anyone else signed up to testify?
No one else signed up, but there were some other gentlemen who wanted to speak.
Let me make one note. I have also included with what was sent around a second copy of something you should have gotten. Mayor Adams will be at a special citywide land use meeting tomorrow night, and we'll be talking about the same issue of process.
And I have some items that I'm going to add to the list as well.
You may do that.
Thank you. What was that last?
Other people asked to speak who didn't sign up.
Who did not sign up. Okay, who are they? Come on up.
Wait a second. Oh, no. That's out of order. Where's your scepter? You're on very thin ice. Where's your scepter?
Thank you, commissioners, and also Happy New Year.
Is that the only one?
Yeah, I was the one that Carla that kind of
okay.
Whispered
just
in your
ear. Just the one, okay.
Thank you. Gwen gave most of the comments, but there's a couple points that I did want to make. One, I want to make clear the commission is not opposed to wind towers downtown in the central city. Oh, sorry, Jeff Stewart, on representing Portland Design Commission. As you probably have heard, the RICAP process actually came to Design Commission, I think, three times. So talk about many of the issues that are in the report, and we support most of those. One area we did dwell on was the wind turbines, and it's not that we're opposed to wind turbines. We support them. We've approved the design of the Indigo Tower with those on. We just want to emphasize that we think that because of the new technology and because of the impacts with location, height, noise, potential, view, and the issue of ancillary structures that may need to support these things, cabling and stuff like that, we think that it's a vital thing to review these things. And that's our point there. Also, it's not to equate wind towers with cell towers. It's just that we go so far as to review things such as cell towers. We're very careful about the design of roofs, and we've kind of been more careful over the last number of years about roofs, pushing green roofs on tops of buildings and really kind of organizing the tops of buildings so that those who view down really are looking something nice rather than kind of 10, 15 years ago where there's just this hodgepodge of equipment up on top of roofs. So we just feel that having staff or ourselves able to take a look at that with the wind turbines in particular is a prudent thing to do. And thank you for your thoughts on this and for taking a look at this. I don't want the impression that we don't support wind towers or turbines. We really do. We just want them done in the right way.
Thank you for your testimony. Could somebody speak to the process issue raised? And because of the in-depth nature of some of these other stuff, I'll take the pulse of council. But an idea would be to have maybe staff work up additional research and their suggestions on our suggestions and some that we heard from staff and come back to us first individually and then either have a work session or another council session. Does that make sense?
Mayor, I think another council session with a chance after the testimony just to go around putting a few of the issues and questions we have on the record.
Absolutely.
Makes a lot of sense.
That's exactly what I'm asking for. Does that make sense to you?
And then the second council session would be another first hearing because there'd be amendments that citizens could comment on.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the process issue, why were neighborhoods shut out of the process?
Yes, I would actually like to challenge the notion that neighborhoods were shut out of the process. Recap 5 has probably had one of the most extensive public outreach processes of any of the regulatory improvement processes. This has been the longest recap package. We started this with a work plan that had a planning commission hearing in August of 2008, so that's almost a year and a half ago. We spent about a year on this package with the Regulatory Improvement Stakeholder Advisory Group. As you heard, we went to the Design and Landmarks Commission, I think 3 times each is correct. We had what we called the Lot Confirmation Task Force for Item 55 dealing with the narrow lots. There was a task force of neighborhood representatives and development community interests that met, I think, about a dozen times over the course of a year. We briefed a number of neighborhood coalitions in the spring of 2009 on the Green Bundle and many of the other amendments. The first draft of the Green Bundle was released in May of 2009. We got pretty extensive press coverage of that proposal in mid-2009. There was some television news interviews and a number of feature stories in the Oregonian. Mayor Adams featured the Green Bundle in his 100-day plan, which means that it was on the sort of the front of the city's website for a while. We did visit the citywide land use group in June, I believe. We held an open house in July. Public notices were sent to over 600 people multiple times through the process, which includes all of the neighborhood associations and land use coalitions. We visited the Development Review Advisory Committee in August. We had two full public hearings with the Planning Commission, including supplemental public notice on the bike parking and the ADU thing, because that got added at the Planning Commission's suggestion. Yes, the draft that was the result of the Planning Commission decision was published in November, but that was simply the putting down on paper of what the Planning Commission recommended we do as a result of the public hearing. So it wasn't a new staff draft. It was the edits made by the Planning Commission and suggested by the Planning Commission. It's true that RECAP, by its nature, covers a lot of issues, and so that's challenging when we're doing public outreach. It's easier, frankly, to do a single subject code package because you can know who you're supposed to outreach to at the very beginning. And RECAP doesn't settle its work plan until partway through. So sometimes when an idea gets added to it partway through as a result of public testimony, we do have to circle back and let people know about it. And that's one of the inherent challenges of this broadcast method of regulatory improvement that we have. But I think we did do a good, staff did a good job, I think, in this one and did involve the neighborhoods. There is clearly some elements of this. This is probably one of the more aggressive packages, and so I think there's some elements of this that people disagree with, but I think we did talk to people.
So maybe if you could stay there and take notes on the council's request for more information. Commissioner Fish, why don't we start with you?
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question about the bike storage issue, and it's not, I don't know what the right number is, and Chris Smith, I guess, said he didn't know what the right number was, but if I could engage Commissioner Leonard in just a quick colloquy, there is a question in my mind about how any requirement impacts development and what's either the cost or the configuration impact or whatever. And since I don't know that answer, could we refer at least that question to DRAC just to get some preliminary comments back about what are the considerations we should be thinking about?
I think we could. I would ask Bonnie what she thought of that. She's a member of DRAC. Do you think that's a good forum to hash that out? Yeah.
Well, absent that, I could ask Director Van Vliet just to canvass some for-profit and nonprofit developers. I don't know what the answer is. The answer may very well be we don't care within a range, or within a certain range there are some practical considerations we want you to think about. So, could do it either way.
But I guess my instinctive response is that while this has a big impact on the bicycling community in terms of a brand new development, it doesn't have that much of an impact in terms of cost. It is a different way of approaching development, but my sense is it would not have a major impact as to whether or not a development were to occur or not because of the incremental.
So why don't we sort of take the spirit and have staff work with Margaret and BDS staff and transportation staff to
thank you.
Get some opinions from others.
I have some additional questions on the R5 zoning issue. That's just because I'm kind of late to this discussion. So I think I'm going to talk to my colleagues about that to better understand it. And on the building eaves issue, now I'm hopelessly confused. I've heard that it is either consistent or inconsistent with almost every value that we have. So just help me, and maybe it's just me. But if you could prepare just a little more analysis to help us understand on the different values of energy efficiency, sustainability, I'd even throw in, if you wouldn't mind, some of the issues we've been dealing with around SEPTEB, around safety issues, lighting. Other kinds of things, water displacement. Just if you could give us a better sense of what you think are some of the pros and cons of that proposal, because it's a little confusing to me. Otherwise, thank you for an outstanding presentation today.
Commissioner Saltzman, any specific issues or questions?
I'm interested maybe in some more information on the solar panel setbacks. Was that just in historic districts?
Yes.
I guess I'm interested in sort of the pros and cons of how that may inhibit the use of solar. So I think that was the main issue.
And I think just to add to that would be sight lines and setbacks. If it's a 3-foot setback, but you wouldn't see it at 1 foot, and I'd like sort of Kathy here to consult with our historic preservation folks as well, if there are ways to get at what would be the total win-win if you don't necessarily see them.
And just before we leave that topic, there is also something going on at the state level about a solar code, and I know there's some concerns about some aspects of those rules that would further maybe limit roof space available for solar panels. So right. I guess I'd like to have it all looked at sort of holistically when you come back to us.
That's a good idea. Commissioner Fritz?
Well, the adage that a picture is worth 1,000 words is definitely held true here. I received the email from the neighbors last night and wondered which the attachment was removed. And so this doesn't seem to be the type of neighborhood development. Now, obviously, it's not able to put into this package, but I'd like to know how we could address this particular issue or what your recommendation is for addressing the issue of enormous retaining walls on sidewalks.
And there actually is a retaining wall amendment in this package.
Oh, there is?
Just to be clear about that.
Oh, so we could change it now. Okay, so if you could direct me to where that is, I missed it. So thank you for coming in and pointing that out. Was interested in the Design Commission's comments on the proposal that turbines could be exempted for 2 years. I'm wondering about a possible sunset or a review process so that whatever we do with turbines, we could come back and look at it and find out whether it's working or not. I concur with Mark White's comments on courtyard density and the A overlay. I have a question about whether the A overlay would in fact double the density in courtyards on with the A overlay, and also concerned about the green space being used as parking and how that's addressed in the package. And also, if you could find for me and get me the copies of the design guidelines for attached houses in neighborhoods and also those for turbines downtown. I no longer have a paper copy of the code, and it's difficult to find stuff. Thank you.
Commissioner Lennon.
Having recently had the opportunity to take advantage of an accessory dwelling unit, I very much support staff's excellent work on that, and feel quite a connection to those that find themselves living in one of those kinds of units. They're very nice, and I appreciate that we're supporting doing even more for smaller houses. On the issue of legal lots of records, item 55, with respect to 2.5 or 5,000 square foot lots. The issue needs to be framed appropriately, and I've certainly spent enough time doing that since I've had the Bureau of Development Services. The issue of density arises from Oregon's unique land use system, and that's often lost in the discussion. And Oregon led the way in the early 70s by adopting strict land use controls that were unique in the United States at that time, that sets aside urban areas for urban development and sets aside other areas for farm and open space and timber. We're watching right now over at Metro quite a battle occur that's threatening to bring Metro to a grinding halt in the decision to try to expand urban reserves for future development and what portions of the urban of the Metro area should be kept in farmland, what portions should be kept in urban development, what portions should be set aside in reserves for future urban development, and that ties directly to this issue. Most Portlanders, if you ask them if they liked Oregon's land use system, would say yes, probably 90 percentile. If you said, would you like to have a skinny lot next door to you, most Portlanders would say no. But that's part of the other side of the coin. So the key for me as the commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Development Services is not whether or not we should have skinny lots, but it's the design of the structure that's on the lot. So therefore, I led in, after first arriving on council, an initiative brought before council that established the first design standards for narrow houses on narrow lots. Second, I initiated the Living Smart program, which was a worldwide competition to find the best designs possible for those kinds of structures. And the reason is as Portland becomes more successful as a community, the economics are such that housing prices get out of whack for working Portlanders, for people who live here, can't afford to live here. People who have jobs here and kids in school can't afford to live here. So Mark is absolutely right that East Portland gets a disproportionate share of that kind of housing. I live in East Portland. I know that. But the reality is East Portland also has probably the most affordable property. So we have to somehow find the balance between how to have affordable housing, how to have it on narrow lots, how to have the infrastructure get built, sidewalks, streets, parks, how to have the houses that are built be attractive and fit with the neighborhood. I get that. But this cannot be a debate as to whether or not we have narrow lots. It's part of our obligation in the larger scheme of the Oregon plan, of Oregon's planning system, to have more density, have affordability for housing for folks, because you can't be for affordable housing and then against initiatives to try to make affordable housing. And this is one of them. But having said that, I've often said and long said we can do a better job at design, we can do a better job at how they fit in and how they reflect the character of a neighborhood. I get that. And I hope the discussion is that and not whether or not we should have narrow lots, because that's going to be a tough one. Thank you.
All right. Any clarifying questions from staff team?
Well, I would note that staff has reviewed the list provided by Commissioner Fritz, and without going into the details, I can say that probably about a third of them make sense to us and that we're supportive of that. I said that the wrong way.
You disagree with the two-thirds of them.
That right away.
That sounds like an attack.
Sorry,
that's less than
a third of them made sense immediately without really thinking.
Errors, yeah. We're dismissed. I will let you finish. A third makes sense. A third really makes sense. And then the third are just like, absolutely.
A third, we think, the other third was that we think there's some clarifications that we could make to respond to your comments, and then there's probably a third where we do think there's more of a policy debate that needs to happen here, and that's what I meant to say.
And I've been counting. That's now we're up to 1.5. and another half.
1.1.
All right. Well, we will.
We
do not have. We won't set a date for when we come back yet, because I want to hear from staff how much time it'll take for you to thoughtfully review these items. So we will. Yeah.
One consequence of not setting a date is that we will have to re-notify then, send out new notice.
So can we set a date, and if we don't meet it,
you can continue it on.
Yeah.
So I would set a date.
We're prepared to answer a lot of these, I think, so we're not.
So what's the last Wednesday in January?
27th.
Could we possibly have an evening hearing?
Well, the mayor's gone the third Wednesday of the month.
So the first Wednesday in February?
The third? That's a land use case for an hour and a half. You do 3:30 on the 3rd of February.
Sound right to folks? You want an evening hearing?
I really appreciate the citizens who took time off work to be here for this afternoon. I was chagrined that I hadn't noticed this on the agenda. I would have asked for an evening hearing for that. It is something that I know a lot more citizens care about, but we're not able to be here.
Do we have an evening hearing already scheduled?
That's the possible continuation of the River Plan North Reach. Second.
Two for one. What day is that?
That's the 17th.
I don't know that we want to double schedule anything else with the River Plan.
You can do a 6 p.m. any time, Wednesday or Thursday.
Well, let's put it down for now for 3:30, and we'll see if we can do something in the evening. But for now, it's 3:30 on?
February 3rd.
February 3rd. Okay. And we have nothing tomorrow, so we're adjourned for the week.
Thank you.
In the last 2 months, I doubt if they had permission from the city. So that they could put asphalt here so their children could play here in a safe way.